So I really was captivated by the science and by the machinery, by the advancements and what their goals were. But along about 2010 and late 2011, I began to see more of the what I would consider to be the occulted side, the hidden side of CERN, which is a spiritual side, presenting what I consider to be evidence of an occulted agenda there that is driven by, I'll just say it, the worship of Lucifer. They have in many, many following statements during the years said that they are actually trying to open a dimensional doorway or a portal to another dimension.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we're going to be talking about CERN. It's a topic that I've been wanting to talk about for a while, dive into what's going on at CERN. I know that it's a research facility for nuclear physics, and in most people's brains, it's just a very benign, clean facility working on trying to understand physics. But there is a growing number of people that think there's more going on at CERN, and there's more evidence to show that maybe there is. And so I've been asking around, and I've been told that Anthony Patch is the person that I should be talking to on CERN. He's been doing a ton of research on this. And so I invited him in. I wanted to talk to him about what's going on at CERN. And as a special treat for my patrons, he is going to stick around and answer some questions on artificial intelligence and where he sees artificial intelligence going. It's a little bit different than the CERN topic, but he's really getting into that as well. Anthony Patch has a magazine called Entangled that many people follow, and he covers these topics on CERN, on quantum computing, on artificial intelligence, and he really dives into it from a Christian perspective. And those of you that know me, I don't shy away from religious topics, but I like to look at things from different perspectives and paradigms. So I will look at it from the religious perspective and from the scientific perspective and try to look at it from all those different angles. And we talk about that, and he loves those conversations. So it ended up being a really great interview looking at it from different perspectives. But before we get into that, I need to do a shout out and a big thank you to one of my patrons, Debbie Tamagos. She has been a supporter for almost 6 months now, and I really appreciate your support, Debbie, and thank you so much for supporting the program and for all of my patrons. It's really making a difference. It's starting to put a chunk out, and I'd like to get to the point where I have enough money where I can hire someone to help me do this, because I'm really at the limit of what I'm able to do. So if I can bring on somebody at least to do some of the editing and some of the, you know, the routine work, it would really make a big difference in my schedule and what I'm trying to get accomplished. But that being said, let's get into the interview now with Anthony Patch. Hi, Anthony. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for the invitation. This is my first time to really even speak with you.
It is. We haven't had a chance to chat yet. I'm really glad you came. I've wanted to cover CERN for a while, and I've been told you're the one to talk to. So I'm excited about it. So thank you very much for coming to the program. And I, you know, there's so much about CERN that I don't really know or understand. So I'm hoping we can keep it at a level that listeners will be able to track. While there probably are some expert physics people out there, I think that most of us don't quite, you know, get to the very detailed level of that. Let me start with what CERN really is. The common view of CERN is it is an international nuclear research facility, and it was started by 12 European countries, of which the United States isn't involved in that, other than we are a country that has observation status that we were granted in 97. Can you tell us what your view is of CERN, and you know, what are they really doing out there?
Sure. Well, let's start with the United States as our first touch point. About 18 months ago, they achieved member status. And that simply means that they are providing a large amount of funding, a large number of professional scientists that are involved in experiments. And as a member, you're able to be scheduled into the program of scientific endeavors. In other words, if you have a specific, as a country, agenda in physics, in particle physics, then you can bring that agenda, you can bring that goal to CERN, and it will be slotted into the schedule during an upcoming year. So really, member status means you get to play with the toys.
So why did they take so long to get involved? I mean, it was only 18 months ago. Mm-hmm. And CERN, when was CERN formed?
Well, they broke ground in 1953, and the United States has been involved as a financial supporter at a low level. But people may recall that there was an effort in the 80s and 90s to build a super collider in Waxahachie, Texas. And they did break ground there. They built a couple of miles of tunnels. Then it was abandoned due to a lack of congressional funding. So the United States always had this idea of building, quote, their own CERN project, actually a much larger project than was envisioned even in Geneva, which is where CERN is located.
So what are they actually doing? I know they're doing basic physics experiments that universities and scientists want to do. Now, are mm-hmm. they related more to universities, or do corporations also get involved with that?
Corporations really get involved through the universities. The corporations will fund the university experiments because this requires the highest level of scientific training and education. So we have engineers and we have physicists primarily, of course, mathematicians that are involved. But the corporations, their more impact or direct involvement is functioning as suppliers of equipment, technologies that are developed in the private sector, and the basic operational supplies. So it isn't really, you know, imagine Google or Microsoft or Lockheed Martin coming over to CERN. That doesn't happen. They'll provide expertise, but really it is a laboratory, university level driven program. And it's primarily for the universities throughout the world to participate in.
Well, my experience with universities is that some of the corporations, or a lot of the corporations, are beyond what the universities are at. And, and you know, maybe in physics it's a different story, but in a lot of other fields, it's the universities are lacking behind the corporation research facilities. Mm-hmm. But in physics, you're saying that's a different ballgame.
Yeah, because in physics, you're talking about hardware and large facilities, not just at CERN, but at places like the University of California at Berkeley, where I attended school. They have a small version of CERN. It's a very small ring-based circular synchrotron particle accelerator that sits up on top of the university campus overlooking the San Francisco Bay, and that's housed in what is known as the Advanced Light Source Building. So there are smaller versions of these ring-based and linear based, straight line based accelerators all around the world. The universities tend to have the hardware, whereas I think in terms of looking at the private sector, we're looking more at research into areas such as you have a background in, and that is in software development. And software development does happen at the higher levels, at the leading edge in the private sector, because of the competitiveness in the advancements, the continuing advancements in software research. Whereas in particle physics, it requires such large machinery and facilities. That's not really something that typically a corporation wants to make a capital investment in.
That makes a lot of sense, because medicine's the same way. The advancements in medicine is pretty, well, I suppose it can, you can see, probably the advancements in medicine is happening everywhere, whether it's universities right. or corporations, and they're more advanced or not more advanced, just all over the place. But
sure.
CERN has been credited for forming the World Wide Web, which I'm not sure if that's true or not, and for mm-hmm. isolating the 38 atoms of antihydrogen. Now, mm-hmm. what other things have they done that, well, first of all, before we get into other things, I thought the World Wide Web was a military deal, not CERN.
Yeah, the World Wide Web was formed primarily at CERN for the distribution of data that resulted from the experiments. The reason for the distribution is that there's so much data, even back in the early days in the 50s and 60s when we had very small computer networks within a given organization, they needed to distribute to laboratories and universities around the world this data to handle the workload, the interpretation of the data. So that then became something that was piggybacked for the continuity of government, specifically, for example, in the United States, where the World Wide Web really took hold. And the government realized that they could use this as a communication system that at that time could not be hacked, it could not be broken into, and could also survive a nuclear attack. So that was the origins of it.
Well, my question is, are they talking just the ability to network computers together and be able to send data, or are they talking the actual protocol of the web?
Well, you would know more about that than I would, because I'm not a computer programmer. But in terms of the actual distribution system, that's the hardware that I'm more familiar with. So I can only answer in terms of the network that was set up initially through hubs and through nodes, I should say, that were established with what you would consider to be dummy terminals that were hooked to the mainframe back at CERN. So really, that's where we start with a server-based system with dummy terminals. Now, interestingly, Berkeley figures in very heavily, even to this day, in terms of data distribution. It is the hub for CERN's distribution. Everything first travels from CERN to Berkeley. Then they distribute to the other laboratories, primarily in the United States. And that's a system called the Energy Science Network. And they've gone through different iterations of that, but they were at 5 and 6. And these are fiber optic systems.
Okay, so now, besides the two inventions that I just brought up, what other things are they doing that the average person doesn't know about? Because I think the majority of the stuff is run-of-the-mill physics experiments and, clean, good stuff that people would think about. And that's what everybody thinks about CERN, or at least the general public. What's going on there that makes you worried?
Well, let's take a touch point that people have heard quite a bit about, and that was back in 2012 and early 2013, the so-called discovery of the Higgs boson. And this is a boson that gives rise to all other matter in terms of their scenario that I don't adhere to, which is the Big Bang scenario for the universe. It is one of the prima materia, one of the first materials formed at the moment of the Big Bang, and they've always advertised they're trying to recreate or model this Big Bang scenario in the laboratory. Thus, they had what was labeled by the media the God particle that was discovered, the Higgs boson. So that just is something that people can have as a touch point. But what really concerned me was I've been researching CERN. I've been aware of it and actually a fan of it, up until the point that I'm going to relate to you, leading back to my experience in the 70s in West Germany, where I was involved with nuclear warheads. And I learned about CERN in my training because it was basically over the hill from where I was stationed. So I really was captivated by the science and by the machinery, by the advancements and what their goals were. But along about 2010 and late 2011, I began to see more of the what I would consider to be the occulted side, the hidden side of CERN, which is a spiritual side. Now, it sounds counterintuitive to think about secular science being involved in any form of spiritual worship, theology, any worship of any gods or the singular God. Now, I take it from a Christian perspective, and therefore I look at things like the placing of the statue of Shiva, a Hindu god, the god of destruction and the god of rebirth of the universe, being placed at the headquarters of CERN. I don't interestingly see a crucifix erected or any other religious icons that are erected there. Only the Hindu god, Shiva. That's where things began to turn the corner for me. And I began as a Christian to explore more of the spiritual aspects of what is defining the agenda that is kept occulted from the public. And there's some definitive information, some definitive proof out there that shows that their agenda is not pure science.
Well, I saw something weird where they were doing an occult ritual at their they had a, what, a 50-year or some kind of ceremony, and they were doing this weird occult ritual. Why would they have an occult ritual at a pure science organization?
So this supposed ritual at CERN of these black-robed and black-hooded individuals really was a mock. It was a spoof on the alternative media to make fun of us who have been presenting what I consider to be evidence of an occulted agenda there that is driven by, I'll just say it, the worship of Lucifer. And we can add to that later on. But this followed on the heels of the Gothard Tunnel opening ceremony, which took place about 100 kilometers from CERN itself in Switzerland. And if anyone has seen the video, which was very public, there was nothing secretive about the video itself. This was purely an occult ritual. In fact, they even showed images of the opening of the portal at CERN. So there's a direct connection between the opening ceremony at the Gothard Tunnel and CERN itself. The other is the video released by CERN preceding the Gothard Tunnel ceremony, which was a video entitled Symmetry. Now, this was a dance performance, but if you look at it through the eyes, through the lens of understanding about occulted dark arts, you can see that this really is a summoning of the spirits ritual, the video Symmetry. And there's quite a bit that you can break down from that. But going back to this supposed human sacrifice or mock sacrifice at CERN, CERN came out and said these were our employees. They did have security badges and passes for access to the area, which was adjoining the statue of Shiva, a Hindu god, a god of destruction and rebirth of the universe. And that was a gift from the government of India. However, I don't see, as I said earlier, a crucifix or any other religious icons there. So you really have to ask yourself, why are they even addressing the spiritual side when the scientists themselves profess to be purely secular?
Well, what I don't understand is that the most of the scientists who are doing studies in CERN would be totally, completely disinterested in that and actually would not want that to be part of what CERN is, right? They don't even, they would think it was a joke as well. And they would think anybody that's looking into this are idiots. But you're saying that there are a group of people, we're starting to see a pattern everywhere, that there's a group of people, whether it's real or not, they think it is, that worship Lucifer, which is, you know, Satan. Now, is it, in your experience by doing this research, is it the employees at large, or is there a small group of people who actually run the place and are financiers of the place that have these beliefs?
Yeah, and one of the touch points you can look at in terms of following the money, as we often do when we investigate, is the involvement of the Jesuits, because the director of CERN for their administrative side and the director at CERN for their experimental side, both are Jesuits, and they take their orders from the Dark Pope, who is the general, if you will. He's considered the general of the Jesuit arm of the Vatican. But it goes far beyond that. But the point is that there is this religious connection, this religious connotation to what is going on. So perhaps to give something that's a little more digestible than talking about, you know, the Vatican's involvement, I'm going to cite a quote from November of 2009 from the then director of research and scientific computing at CERN, a gentleman by the name of Sergio Bertolini. Now, I may not be pronouncing that correctly, but his statement is, something may come through dimensional doors at the Large Hadron Collider. And basically what he is saying here is, out of this door might come something, or we might send something through it. So that gives you an idea that there's more going on here than just pure science. They have, in many, many following statements during the years, said that they are actually trying to open a dimensional doorway or a portal to another dimension. So this goes beyond them just modeling the moment of the Big Bang and the origins of the universe. This then begins to move into the realm of communicating with the other side, communicating with other entities. Again, as a Christian, I would consider this communication with demonic entities, specifically fallen angels.
Could that be communication with a light side? You know, there could be more to our world than we understand. And could it be just multiple dimensions? And it could be an innocent thing to try to do.
Sure. But then you have a follow-up statement by the eminent cosmologist, astrophysicist in his own right, Dr. Stephen Hawking, remarking back in 2009 to Sergio Bertolini's statement. And Stephen Hawking said, not to do this, not to open this doorway to other dimensions, because we may not like what comes through, that this could be an existential threat to our environment. And he even went into the particle physics aspect of it, or the quantum mechanics, if you will, in stating that opening such a portal could result in the formation of a vacuum bubble that would expand at the speed of light, enveloping not only the Earth, but could envelop the entire universe. So from a purely scientific standpoint, he is saying, Stephen Hawking is saying, this is not a good idea.
Well, he's pretty much saying, we don't know what we're doing, guys. We could destroy ourselves.
That's correct. And this goes back to another person who was a practitioner of the Hindu religion, and that is Dr. Oppenheimer, out at Trinity when they did the first nuclear test. And they were concerned, many of the physicists were concerned, that they would be igniting the atmosphere of the Earth. But they went ahead and did it anyway. And upon detonation, he made the famous statement that from the Bhagavad Gita, that I have become death. And this is very concerning. Again, we're looking at his Hindu practices and then that thread being carried through a lot of the research that I see in mainstream particle physics and resulting in, again, this statue of Shiva at CERN, which again is a reflection of the Hindu worship. And if you delve into that religion, you begin to see the things in terms of relationships of opening portals and tapping into a single energy source. So when we try to look at it from a positive aspect and say, maybe we're just communicating with other entities that are benevolent, maybe this could be a benevolent scenario, I really question it. Again, from a Christian perspective, I look at it as, this is the only dimension that there is that God created. This is the only realm that he expected us to live in and exist in. And if you look back into the ancient occulted practices, such as Crowley was involved with, John Dee and Edward Kelly in the late 1500s, extending back into the Babylonian, Sumerian, and Egyptian practices, they were all involved in what you would consider to be communicating with the dead, with necromancy and specifically geomancy. So this has been carried all through human history, this idea of communication with another dimension.
Is there any evidence that the entities in another dimension have already tried communicating with us, or they're here? Because I hear that all over the place that, you know, I haven't really covered that, but people say that there's other dimensions and that they're so far advance of us that they already know how to get here and back and forth and do their things. It's just us trying to figure out how to do that now. Do you have any evidence of that?
Well, again, I like to use the word touch point. I like to make things very relevant for the audience. And so one of the easy examples is World War II and the Nazis. And it's quite obvious that they were involved in the dark arts and that they were involved in communicating to another dimension with other entities and gaining technologies from those communications that resulted in the implements of war that were far in advance of anyone else in the world. So what we're looking at is not just the example of the Nazis. We can look at this back into Egypt. We can look at the attempted building of the Tower of Babel. All of these things that are well known to most people are examples of information that is considered to be forbidden information we are not supposed to have access to. But I agree with you the other side, so to speak, has advanced information. The information has resulted in what I call the evidence of evil. When we look at the technologies today that are advancing so quickly, and we look at the application of these technologies, which ultimately are for the replacement of God's creation, specifically the humans, and the changing of this planet, what I call terraforming the planet. If you look at the areas that I research, which are DNA, quantum mechanics, quantum physics, and artificial intelligence in terms of quantum computing, the tie-ins are there, but you can see that their applications of these high advanced technologies that we have been derived from the other side. Now, specifically, to have people been communicating already with the other side and small portals, temporary portals, being opened through rituals and ceremonies. Absolutely. You can look through the historical record and see that. You can look at the modern record with Aleister Crowley and see that. Jack Parsons, he was involved in this. So there's plenty of scientific technology you can look at as evidence that has been derived well ahead of any other advancements or research in any other areas of the world, that specific people are gaining specific advantage technologically through this communication with the other side. Now, I'm going to make a leap over very quickly. I'll make this very short. Quantum computing. The leader in quantum computers right now is D-Wave Systems out of Burnaby, British Columbia. Very famous statement that I have quoted in verbatim. I've produced and published in my magazine, Entangled Magazine, a transcript from 2013 by one of the founders of D-Wave, Gordy Rose, in which he was saying at that time they were accessing 2 to the 500th power of parallel dimensions. And that if we were smart enough and clever enough, we could reach in and extract resources from those dimensions and bring it back into ours. So this is openly, and there's many other quotes that I've provided in my magazine at anthonypatch.com, in which I'm citing these statements by people that are leaders in technology, like we're seeing from Sergio Bertolini at CERN, we're seeing from Gordy Rose from D-Wave, openly talking about communication with the other side. And the most recent statement this year by Gordy Rose from D-Wave is that he cited H.P. Lovecraft, who was a writer of occulted books, novels, at the turn of the century, early 1900s. And he cited H.P. Lovecraft in a presentation he made at Tech Vancouver, where he was trying to recruit software engineers, hardware engineers, into his company called Kindred, which is now spun off into Sanctuary. These are AI robots. He cited H.P. Lovecraft's characters of the great old ones returning. He was saying to these scientists, we need to prepare our AI in advance of the return of the great old ones, because they are. And he wasn't speaking euphemistically. These were not allegories. He was saying that he believed that the great old ones were returning and that they would relegate us and their perception of the human race, relegate us to the level of how we perceive ants.
That's not funny. It's just, you know, looking at us as ants. Okay. Scares the heck out of me that we're doing things that we don't understand. There's right. So many examples of us doing something we don't understand and just hurting ourselves because we're dumb enough to hurt ourselves. But that being said, can you give me some evidence of something where, you know, because a lot of times, you know, I talk to scientists that are doing all sorts of really incredible inventions, and I mm-hmm. know they're coming up with it themselves, or they believe they are.
Sure.
But you're saying that a lot of our advanced technology comes from the other side. How do you mm-hmm. know that their mind isn't just more advanced? You know, there's a lot of really advanced scientists. How do you mm-hmm. know that they didn't just come up with it versus the other side, or somebody is feeding them this information? Mm-hmm.
Sure. I will definitely agree with you that as we were talking about CERN, there's a lot of compartmentalization that takes place. And most scientists, most researchers are focused on a specific discrete area of research. They tend not to look into parallel or outside areas. They don't stray very far because they're under tight constraints in terms of what information they can access, but also their timetable for producing results is very restrictive. And their funding is always at risk, whether it's grant programs or direct funding through a private sector corporation. They don't want to lose their jobs, to make it very simple. So they tend to stick to the program and stick to the agenda that's been given to them. Much of the information in science in general is built upon the shoulders of previous scientists in previous generations. The breakthroughs tend to come from the radicals, from the mavericks, from the people that are out there doing independent research, and they come up with these breakthroughs. Now, many of these people, the mavericks, tend to be people who will explore such things as what we would consider to be alchemy. Now, science in general has its roots and continues to operate in the realm of alchemy. But when we look at things specifically, let's talk about computing as an example. Even in quantum computers, they use qubits. Those are quantum bits. This is still basic binary, zeros and ones. In quantum computing, they get into talking about superposition. But I want to give the origins of computing, and you have the background on this, but you perhaps may not be aware of the historical background to binary systems. It has its origins in geomancy, which is the divination of seemingly random marks in the soil or in the sand, or the casting of stones and sticks on the ground. And then one who is schooled in this dark art performs what is known as a divination to interpret these seemingly random marks. Well, the idea behind geomancy is that the person who is not schooled, who's making these random marks, is being guided by a spirit or multiple spirits from the other side. And that spirit is guiding those makings of the marks in the soil. Then the schooled one is then who understands this communication system, interprets those marks. This is all binary. Again, in my Entangled magazine, I have shown the definitive images of the 16 geomantic figures that all result in what we would consider to be base 2 mathematics today. The whole system evolves into Cantor sets, which you're a mathematician, you understand Cantor sets. All of these things lay the foundation for our computer systems today. I'm going to cut to the chase. When we go back to the example of D-Wave and their quantum computers accessing parallel dimensions, this is a geomantic device designed and intended to further the communication with the other side. Now, that sounds crazy, but if you begin to look at the origins of the science, the programming, if you look at their stated operational systems for the operation of the computing system, their software operation, which is combinatorial optimization, and you look at the statements by Gordy Rose as to his theological pursuits with the device, the picture becomes very clear.
Well, I would have to disagree with you a little bit in the sense that a binary mathematical thing could be originating from something other. I mean, I think it's a universal language. It's mathematics.
It is.
And so, And so whether somebody had the dark arts or not, I mean, it would be, people would come up with it in multiple places at the same time. It's a universal language. So whether, you know what I'm saying? Universal languages are benign. I mean, they can't really be evil or not evil. It just is what it is. Mm-hmm. But that being said, you know, the whole notion of us doing something that we don't understand and getting ourselves in a nightmare and having people who believe in Lucifer, who are doing evil things, the ones that are, I get worried about advanced technology being in the hands of people who don't care about the welfare of the human race. And mm-hmm. they have bad intentions. We got the worst of the worst with the best technology at their disposal. That scares
Agreed.
Me.
Agreed.
Now that, yeah, that being said, have you heard of anything about, you know, some of the ideas that we were actually forming, getting back to this whole thing that this other race or this thing thinks we're a bunch of ants? I mean, I could imagine there's another species or entity out there that's so much more evolved mm-hmm. than us that we are like nothing. That being said, have you heard of the notion of us being formed as a slave race back in our human origins?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we'd get into the discussion of, the aliens, so to speak. We get into this discussion of panspermia, that somehow we were either born out of DNA material, biological material, transported by comets or asteroids that, you know, landed on this planet, and spontaneously we had this birthing of the human race. That's the panspermia scenario. The other is that there was an advanced race that came here and modified our existing DNA. If you look at the movie 2001, I mean, they present that scenario that we were interfered when we were apes genetically, and that we had this sudden quantum leap, so to speak, in our DNA advancement, what they want to consider to be evolution, but it was evolution that was tampered with. Now, that's possible. I've done a lot of research into DNA and RNA. It is possible that our DNA code was manipulated. The evidence of that I would take, again, from a Christian perspective and look at something that you, I'm sure, are aware of, is the discussion of the giants, the Nephilim. And this was DNA modification. This was the reason for the flood, was to eliminate these races of, and there were multiple tribes, so to speak, of the Nephilim in existence. And this is recorded in the Bible. Now, that bloodline, that DNA bloodline, has not been entirely eliminated. Many people think the flood eliminated it. That DNA continues to today, not in the form of giants, but that DNA still is here. So what we're talking about is the human genome, the mapping of the human genome, and whether there has been modification from visitors from other planets. I don't hold to that other planet scenario. I don't hold to the panspermia. I don't hold to the genetic modification of the apes. But there was, in again, recorded in Scripture, that fallen angels took human form and mated with human women, and thus birthing the race of the Nephilim. Now, I take the Bible literally, and I take it as the Word of God, even though it's been tampered with. We understand there have been a lot of different versions of the Bible out there, and a lot has been removed from the Bible. But what we do have, I still think, through the Holy Spirit and the discernment that's provided that way, you can still see the truth in the record there. So genetic modification has taken place. It still continues today. The human genome has been completely mapped now and digitized, converted to zeros and ones. Again, the universal language of math. And going back to what you said earlier, I want to underscore that whether we're looking at mathematics, DNA, the human genome, or looking at particle physics or quantum computers, all of these are based upon information that God provided to us. Now, there is information that was forbidden for our own benefit. In other words, going back to the Garden of Eden, where we're talking about if you eat from the, or partake from the tree of knowledge, then you will know good and evil, and you will thus become as gods. Now, those are the words of Lucifer. The problem here is that he is counterfeiting. He cannot create anything from scratch. I don't care if it's technology or DNA. All he can do is counterfeit God's own creation. So he takes something like math as a universal language, and he counterfeits that. In other words, he applies it for his own agenda. Satan's agenda, literally, and his fallen angels, again, recorded in the Bible, is to do battle with God's angels, the remaining two-thirds.
So why do you think Why do you think the elites or these group of people worship Lucifer? I mean, what do they believe that is better than looking at the light side? They probably don't even realize they're looking at the dark side, maybe.
That's the essence of deception. Now, Lucifer is the father of lies. He's the master of deception. So unfortunately, when you begin to turn away from God as the creator and you no longer worship God, if you believe in the secular aspect that really everything, you know, is evolutionary or was spontaneous or, you know, things just happen for physical reasons, scientific reasons, that there isn't any spiritual involvement, there's no Godhead, so to speak, then you're turning yourself away from God himself as the creator. And the information that he can give you, that enlightenment that he can give you, if you will, without sounding new age, what are you left? Well, there are only two choices in life. There's God or there's Lucifer. So if you turn away from God, the default is you're turning towards Lucifer. And you're being deceived by a secular structure, deceived into believing that all the answers to mankind's problems can be found in science. Well, again, the origins of science is in alchemy. We need to understand the origins in order to understand the modern day applications of science. So where we're at is the belief in the original lie in the Garden of Eden was, ye shall be as gods. In other words, immortality. Therefore, we see all of this research in DNA and RNA in defeating death. This is the reason for the mapping of the human genome. They'll talk about the defeat of diseases as a benevolent scenario, but the ultimate scenario is to defeat death. And we get into this whole discussion of transhumanism. So what we're looking at are individuals who believe that they are doing something benevolent, that they are trying to cure cancer, etc. But those that are funding them, that are setting the pathway for their agenda in research, are actually trying to recreate the human race 2.0. When you really get into looking at the scientific papers, because this is what I do, I read their peer-reviewed papers. I understand where they're heading with their science years before it comes out in the mainstream. Because you know as a researcher that you can look into the historical scientific papers and you can see what their plan was, because you can do it retroactively or you can do the present day papers and see where they're intending on going in the next few years. So the whole point here is that they have been deceived into believing they will achieve immortality, thus sidestepping God's judgment. And his judgment quite literally is coming. Jesus Christ is returning very soon because we are in the days of Noah. And this time it will not be by a flood, but it will be by fire, the burning of the elements, as it says in Revelation.
Okay, well, let me ask you a couple questions. I think there's a difference, though, and I think you answered this as well, but I want to state this differently. Sure. There's a difference between the scientists who are trying to eradicate cancer, who there's 8 million people a year just in the United States who are dying from cancer, who didn't used to die from cancer. So a lot of this is man-made problems. And, you know, the Bible says that people used to live to be 500. So maybe we were much healthier and different back then and something happened. And maybe we are able to live that long. But that's not living forever. That's not immortality. But there's a difference between a doctor trying, or a scientist who doesn't really follow God and religion, but are trying to do good things and help with cancer and stuff, versus people who legitimately do ritual sacrifice abuse and worship Satan for real.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference. And what I'm trying to figure out is, why do they worship Satan for real? I mean, why would they possibly think that's a good thing? And you answered part of this question that I was going to say, that they're using the other people to get their agenda done. They're using good people to do something.
Oh, yeah.
Why do they believe that? I mean, what possibly could have gotten them to the point to believe that?
Well, it comes down to human nature in terms of one of the manifestations of human nature, which is greed, greed for power, greed for wealth, if you will. But it really comes down to the power that is derived from ritual sacrifice. They're seeking power, either power to control people or economic power and wealth, whatever their bent, so to speak, whatever their motivating factor is. So when you take an innocent, the more innocent the better, and sacrifice that innocent, you achieve an impartation of information. When they talk about power, it's actually a transfer of information that is given. It's a how-to scenario, if you will. Power is more related to actual information that you're given. If you want to consider it a download, for example, people talk about they suddenly became aware of something. Give you an example is Tesla. Tesla's advancements. He openly acknowledged that he was communicating with entities, perhaps from, in his parlance, entities on Mars. But he was clearly in communication with other entities. And you look at the information that he was given. This is the type of scenario we're talking about. When people are given inspiration for new technologies, that's coming typically through ritual sacrifice.
But aren't there a lot of good scientists? I mean, was Tesla involved in ritual sacrifice?
No, not to my knowledge.
Yeah, so there are a lot of good scientists who don't do that. But you're saying that these whack jobs are killing the most innocent people because they get not just energy, but they get information.
That's correct. Example, going again back to the late 1500s, 1575, 79, John Dee and Edward Kelly, they were communicating with the other side. And what they were receiving was a written alphabetic language, which is represented in their tablets and in their books. And also, not just a written and spoken language, but a mathematical language that resulted in the manipulation, the alchemy, the manipulation of elements. This is the whole lead into gold scenario, which involves monoatomic gold. But the point here is that the mathematics that they received guided them in the reconfiguration at the molecular and atomic level of matter. So the true essence of alchemy was derived from this mathematical information they received through rituals.
Okay, let's get on to a little bit different topic because I want to make sure I cover this before this interview is done. They're planning to build another CERN in China, CERN 2.0. Why are they planning to do this? What does CERN 1.0 not have for them that they need to build another one?
Well, this has been in the works, and again, appreciated there's a lot of lead time in the planning, but going back to 2008, 2009, China has been discussing building this collider, some 57 kilometers, I believe it is. CERN's is in circumference is 27 kilometers. So roughly, the Chinese want something that's about twice the size of what CERN presently is operating. Now, this was and still is on the planning table, in the planning stage. This was something that predated what they are now working with at CERN, which is a linear accelerator, a straight line accelerator. This is similar to what Stanford has with their SLAC, which is the Stanford Linear Accelerator facility. What CERN is doing is implementing what is known as the Awake Linear Accelerator. They have in their prototype, in their proof of concept experiments that they ran last year and they'll continue this year, is this ability to achieve a 1,000-fold increase in the energies derived from collisions than they are presently receiving in their 27-kilometer ring. The Awake Linear is only, the chamber itself is only 10 meters long. The entire architecture is 30 meters long. So what I'm saying is that this negates the necessity for China to build anything. They don't need to. the goal was, or the thinking was, that they needed to achieve higher and higher energies in order to open this dimensional portal, to in order to break the nuclear bond. This is not nuclear fission or fissile materials or fusion. This is actually separating the nuclear force that binds quarks together. This is where we get into talking about something that predates the Higgs boson, because, and I don't believe in the scenario of the Big Bang, but what they put out in mainstream science is, at the moment that the singularity exploded, there was something predating the Higgs boson. The boson is a class of quantum particles known as strangelets. This is a quark gluon condensate. The gluon is the binding force holding quarks together. This is also what is known in quantum mechanics as the nuclear binding force. In order to overcome that binding force, you have to reach a specific energy level. They believe that by overcoming that nuclear binding force will result in the opening of this portal, or as Bertolini said, this doorway. They believe they needed a larger collider to achieve that level. What they're able to do now with AWAKE is to join the linear with the circular and achieve what I believe their target to be, when I do the math, is 20 peta electron volts. That's into the quadrillions. Right now, they're in the trillions at 13.5 tera electron volts. They're going to make a quantum leap into the quadrillions to do this.
Now, have they already been, is it already working?
AWAKE is successful. They have not opened the portal because they have not conjoined the powers of the two colliders. What they're going to do is accelerate particles in the ring, feed those into the back end of this linear accelerator, picture loading a rifle, and in that chamber, then take the pre-accelerated and accelerate them further. That will result in 20 peta electron volts targeting the center point of the main ring area known as the north area. It's a north area impact point where they're already doing experiments. That is where they will open the portal. And Revelation 9 indicates that they will be successful. Because in Revelation 9, it says the angel was cast from heaven, which is Lucifer, and given the key to the abyss, to the bottomless pit. CERN presently is located on the ancient Roman temple site to Apollo, Abaddon, the destroyer. They believe that they are located over the physical location to the doorway to the abyss, and the key is achieving this power level to open the doorway at the center point of the main ring.
So how many scientists do you believe are in on this or that know about this?
Again, compartmentalization and fear of loss of employment and all of that plays into this. But I think a lot of them buy into the hype. They buy into the notion of they're going to achieve, you know, these advancements in science. That's the mainstream. But I do think that there are a very small group that are in control at CERN, certainly at the top levels, the directors. They understand when Sergio Bertolini says they're going to open a doorway, that information spreads despite compartmentalization throughout the scientific community. Now, privately, they might, in a private conversation that they don't think is going to go anywhere, they're fearful of opening this doorway. But in the public arena, when they talk, if you were to interview these scientists and engineers, they would say, well, you know, yeah, that's sort of what we're going to do, but it's not really opening a doorway. It's more complex, and I can't really explain it to you because it's so complex. They tend to sidestep it and dodge it, saying that these are very arcane things that unless you're a physicist, you won't understand it. They play the role of being the priesthood with this arcane language of mathematics and quantum physics.
And then every so often we get an argument between two physicists or something saying this isn't what we should be doing. And it plays out a little bit more publicly, like with Hawking.
Yeah.
So the Chinese CERN then is not going to go forward because it's not needed, or are they planning on doing one anyways?
No, I don't believe they will, because we have to look at the timetable according to scripture. Now, I never tend tend to put myself out or try to be anything in the terms of a prophet here, but it is evident that we are in the last days. I don't think there's enough time to build a machine, but I also don't think that there's a scientific necessity for it in physics, because the linear accelerator AWAKE has achieved far more than they expected it to achieve in terms of its performance, its power levels. They already know that they're going to be able to achieve it with this device. In 2016, in September, I made the statement that CERN already had hit 1 petaelectron volts, 1 quadrillion, okay? And 3 weeks later, they came out and publicly acknowledged that I was correct, that they had, for a brief time, achieved 1.14 petaelectron volts. I cite that because it is indicative of what they are able to achieve now that they have another machine that can produce 1,000 times more power than they've already achieved with the main ring.
Do they ever publicly come out and claim that they are not, that this is for the benefit of humanity, and tell people that stuff that you're talking about and others is just not true? Do they ever defend themselves? Do they?
Oh, sure. Sure they do. But they tend to ignore us because they want to marginalize us, and that's why they did the mock sacrifice, was to mock us and point fingers at us. But no, they try to ignore us, and by ignoring us, they try to marginalize us. But once in a while, you will see them come out and say, boy, they'll really have fun with this one. We have to keep it quiet. And I don't have the video to show you, but the present director, a woman from Italy, I don't have it in front of me, but she made the statement that was captured on film, on video, in which she said about the Higgs boson discovery, look, we achieved this, and this was 11 o'clock at night, we achieved this, but we have to make like tomorrow morning when the press is here that we actually achieved it when the press was here for the first time, even though we've already achieved it tonight, because if this gets out, the alternative media will have a field day with it, and they'll claim that we're all liars. So that's one example.
Where can people learn more about you and your work, and also about CERN?
Well, anthonypatch.com is my website, and I publish Entangled magazine. We've been publishing that since June of last year, and that's my venue for providing the real details that in interviews and my radio program I'm not able to get into. So Entangled magazine really is a wealth of information. It's hardcore evidence and hardcore scientific research.
Would you be willing to stick around and answer another interview question for my patrons?
I'd love to. Sure.
Okay, I appreciate it. And thank you so much for joining the program today.
Oh, my pleasure. Excellent questions.